Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Our standing is that I'm representing the people of Arizona, who are now down one representative, and more specifically, I'm representing the 813,000 people in CD7 who are now being taxed without representation.
Yet another Democrat politician from Arizona is trying to get national publicity. So now it's the state AG who's going to sue me because Grijalva is not, Repelec Grijalva is not yet sworn in.
If we cave on this, it's going to be a very difficult 3 years going forward. Every time we try and fund the government, the Democrats will come in and say, we want X, Y, and Z, and if you don't give it to us, we're going to shut down the government.
Trying to do both does not serve the purposes of either her role as chair or her role as a candidate running for a very competitive district, both in a primary and a general election.
I would like my national organization to help further the interests of governors, and it's been challenging to be on the same page in these really partisan times, and I'm not sure that that's what's happening right now.
And with me to talk about a lawsuit trying to force a congressional swearing-in, a couple of new entrants into congressional races, and more are Paul Bentz of High Ground. Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
And Democratic strategist Tony Connie. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Tony, let me start with you. AG Chris Mays threatened to sue House Speaker Mike Johnson for not swearing in Adelita Grijalva, the representative-elect. Now she has done it. Grijalva is a party to that suit as well. Does this speed things up at all, do you think?
I don't know if it's going to speed things up, but it's a way to be like, hey, look, this is real. I know this is like a game that you're playing in Washington, D.C., but this is having a real impact on the people of Arizona. And so, you know, the attorney general, you know, when she threatened to sue, it was a hope that maybe that would be something that would push, you know, the speaker to actually, you know, do the ceremony to like, you know, to make, you know, take the elect out of Congresswoman-elect Grijalva's title. But, you know, I really wish, you know, he's used so many different excuses about the reason why he's not doing this. And of course, the, you know, most people are saying that it's because of the Epstein files and all that kind of stuff. You know, he's not negotiating with Democrats right now. I don't know what he's doing. I wish he's got plenty of time. I wish he would just do this. He's also being asked a lot of questions about this. If he just did this swearing in, like, this would stop being an issue. And so it is really frustrating. You know, just do it. Give the voters in that district representation so that they have an office that they can call, like all those regular things. And, you know, it's pretty frustrating.
Well,
from my perspective.
Paul, one of the interesting things is there seems to be some debate about what Representative-elect Grijalva can actually do. She's saying, you know, I don't have an email. I don't have access to databases. I finally got keys to the office, but like I'm not really sure. I can't hire staff. And Speaker Johnson's like, you should be doing all that stuff anyway. Don't make TikTok videos. Help your constituents. She's saying, I can't.
Well, she's following the rules here, and if he's saying she should do it and she should do all the things that a congresswoman would do, why wouldn't they just swear her in?
Yeah.
I mean, this is why people are fed up with Washington. This is when we talk about the swamp that we're allegedly supposedly draining. You've got a Republican saying that they don't want to swear this individual in, and it's this whole notion that you can't give an inch on anything. So you've got larger negotiations going on. You've got the budget bills. You've got the shutdown, and it leaks all the way down to a swearing in of a rightly elected person who wants to get in and do their job. It's just this is why people are fed up with Washington. This is why people are fed up. And you know, there's people cheering, I'm sure, because of the hyper-partisan nature of the way things go. But this only makes things worse. It doesn't make anything better.
I wonder, Tony, if looking at this sort of in a cynical political lens, in some way, does this maybe help Representative-elect Grijalva? In if nothing else, I mean, she's kind of a household name now, whereas maybe if she had just been elected in a special election in Tucson to succeed her father, maybe people across the country wouldn't know who she was.
Yeah, I mean, the least senior, the most junior member of the entire Congress is now getting probably the most media attention that's positive of any of them. And so from that perspective, it's true. But, but she doesn't care about that. You know, she's even said, look, I would like to just have a meeting with the speaker so we can talk this out. Like she really legitimately just wants to get to work.
So, Paul, like, how does this end? What's the end game here? I mean, is it really like the government has to reopen before she gets sworn in? And if that goes on, like, for months, I mean, they're not really negotiating, so who knows how long the shutdown will last. Could she be in this limbo for some really long period of time?
Certainly, and I think that sort of the turnabout is fair play. It sort of reminds me of the filibuster discussion. You know, people want to get rid of it when it's something that they want, and then they want to keep it when they're trying to fight against something they get. The slow playing of appointments in this case, you know, certainly then there's a precedent for it if the Democrats come into control and maybe they follow the same rules. People don't think long term about the impact of what they're doing. People don't think of the impact of how it's going to play out when they are maybe not in charge or maybe, you know, the next time they need something done. And in fact, I think swearing her in would be a sign of goodwill towards the Democrats to try to maybe get them to the negotiating table or get them to maybe at least have a discussion. But no, it's like everything right now. Every little bit, just anytime you can twist the knife, you know, they're just seeming to try to find a way to do it at this point.
And yet there are still people who want to serve in Congress. We saw this week, Paul, two Republicans getting into races. Let's start with CD1. That is the seat that Congressman David Schweikert is leaving to run for governor. Gina Swoboda, she'd been rumored to be jumping into this race. She made it official this week. She, of course, is the chair of the state Republican Party. But she's also not seemingly universally beloved by all members of the party.
Right. I mean, so CD1's one of our very competitive districts. It's going to be a tough race. Two cycles ago, Schweikert only won it by about 2,000 votes. In the presidential cycle, he actually won it by about three times as much. But every race, it's a very competitive district. It was one of the things that Democrats really focused on when they did redistricting is they gave up some power in some other districts and made them even redder to make this one a little bit more competitive long term. I had said at the time that by the end of the decade, it would be a Democratic seat. That was the goal. I'm not sure in this cycle, the way things are right now with registration and whatnot, if that's going to happen. But no, she's not only – she did get Trump's endorsement, so I think that's huge for her in the primary and certainly makes her the front runner. But she's also spoken out on things like ESAs and others that are actually pretty reasonable approaches to things, and that doesn't necessarily make her popular with some of the base.
Is she somebody who clears the field for Republicans?
I don't think any of these open seats are going to have a clear field. I think in this environment right now, we didn't get the 10th congressional district following the census. So there is this increased desire. We didn't – I always say we talked about rearranging the deck chairs. The 10th district would have done that. You know, we don't have that. So between the CD1 spot open and the CD5 open, I think we're going to see a lot of Republicans jump in to try to jockey for position because it's as close to an open spot as you're going to get.
Yeah. So, Tony, if you are any of the number of Democrats running in CD1, you see Gina Swoboda jump in, what is going through your mind?
Well, I think they probably are thinking about the fact that the Trump endorsement is something that is powerful in making it so she might get through that primary. Of course, he has endorsed multiple people in competitive races recently, so maybe he will do that again. And so either way, though, you're looking at the fact that, okay, they're going to have now a messy primary the way that potentially we are going to have a competitive primary. And so there's a hope that, you know, that they're going to tear each other down on the Republican side enough and try to go farther and farther and farther right the way that you see is happening in the governor's race in order to appeal to President Trump in a district where that really won't be helpful at all. And so from that regard, it's like, OK, good. Why don't you guys have this little Trump fight over there on the side, especially when, you know, his popularity is so bad, especially on the economy right now. And we're going to just focus on trying to, you know, run a good campaign so that you can get someone to represent you who cares about you and not President Trump only.
Tony, do you think that the Democratic field in that race is set at this point?
I don't. I think so. But anybody could jump in at any time. We're seeing that. And one thing that I think you saw from the last cycle is that when there is this sort of really large field, kind of anybody can win.
You don't need a huge majority to win.
Yeah, and I think especially right now where, you know, where Democrats are really like looking for leadership and looking for people who are willing to fight, I think that people might be open to other candidates. And so I, you know, one of the things when it comes to this is like, is there somebody who's courageous enough to decide to jump in now instead of waiting for another opportunity? And if somebody's been thinking like, I want to run for Congress, like this is a good opportunity. And so You know, I haven't heard anything, but I would not be surprised if somebody else jumped in.
Okay.
I think people from both sides are thinking about it. There's a lot of, you know, thinking, calling, looking around. You know, I get calls from people. What do you think? You know, oh, I'm just – it's – when it's an open seat, especially in that sort of area where there's a lot of wealth, where there's been a long-time congressman so that it hasn't been competitive more recently, mm-hmm. I think people look at that as an opportunity. I see why Democrats would think it's a good opportunity. I don't know if this is the right cycle for that. Midterms generally benefit Republicans. But that said, it's as open as it's going to be. So I think a lot of people are going to seriously consider it.
Well, so, Paul, you'd mentioned how Svoboda has the Trump endorsement. And Tony pointed out correctly that President Trump does have a habit at times of endorsing multiple candidates in the same race. We see it in the governor's GOP primary. I wonder, though, in that district, how much weight does a Trump endorsement carry, maybe relative to some of the other districts in this state?
In the primary, quite a bit still. I mean, it's a big chunk of Scottsdale. It's very, very conservative leaning. We see the Scottsdale mayor won on a pretty conservative platform. I think it really helps in the primary. In the general election, it's going to be more difficult. CD1's also home to several of our swing legislative districts. It's well exercised. A lot of ground game in those areas, a lot of very attentive people on both sides, and a proven list of sort of crossover Republicans and independents who have willing to pick and choose. But Svoboda is a little bit different in that she's not quite – this is not the MAGA candidate. I mean, they're going to paint her as that, but she doesn't have that same MAGA credential despite being very successful for Trump and others.
It's interesting because for a long time, David Schweiker, rightly or wrongly, was sort of seen as tiptoeing this line between MAGA and not. And here you're kind of describing Gina Svoboda the same way. She has the Trump endorsement, but has also kind of ticked off some of the MAGA voters.
Right. And, you know, I think there certainly will be another candidate that tries to harness that at a minimum. They typically can't help themselves. There'll probably be more than one of those types that jump in together and fight against one another. We've seen that in multiple races in that general area. So I expect that to be the same this time around as well. Svoboda being not only Trump endorsed, and you're right, and look at the Masters versus Hamadeh race and others. There's been multiple endorsements. Certainly a chance of that, mm-hmm. but her getting it early I think will really help her in this case.
Tony, we were talking about CD1 just a moment ago. Let's talk about the 5th Congressional District. This is the district in the Southeast Valley that Congressman Andy Biggs is leaving to also run for governor. And there are already a number of pretty well-known candidates in that race, not least among them former Cardinals kicker Jay Feely, Travis Grantham, a state representative. But this week, a former Pinal County Sheriff Mark Lamb said that he was also jumping into that race. He, of course, ran against Kerry Lake in the Senate race last time and did not make it out of the primary. But the conventional wisdom is that he sort of becomes the front runner, maybe based on name ID, at least at this point. Do you buy into that?
Yeah, I think I do. I was surprised that he announced the run only because I've done some radio programs with him over the time, you know, and I've chatted with him about this. And he was reluctant. He basically said, like, I have an opportunity to sort of live a regular life with my wife and do all these kinds of things. But he did say that Senator Hoffman had been recruiting him.
Hmm. And Jake Hoffman, the chair of the Freedom
Caucus, for a long time. And so it looks like, you know, finally that message went through. But, you know, I'm sure they were doing polling and, you know, and there must have been a shift or perhaps he just, you know, got a little more confident there is a, you know, a reason to do this. I don't think he would jump in and run if he thought that it wasn't going to be a pretty clear race. That's just my, you know, sort of read of things. And so, you know, I was very surprised. But, you know, we'll see. I think the bigger question up there is going to be about fundraising. And, you know, you've got Grantham, who legislators tend to not have a great Republican legislators, when they run for Congress, aren't great at raising money. It's a thing. It's a challenge to learn to raise the amount of money you need for a congressional race. And so, you know, I imagine that that the sheriff will have a much higher profile and be able to raise a lot more money. And then, you know, it's just going to be a MAGA off up there to see sort of who can, you know, try and get the president's endorsement.
Well, that's again a really, really safe Republican district. I mean, do you think his Senate run helps him in terms of name ID and fundraising?
Yeah, he's also just – I mean, he had like a reality TV show, right? Like, I mean, this is a very like public, you know, guy. And so – you know, very charismatic. And so I do think I think that he's a really strong candidate.
Paul, do you see him as the front runner having jumped in now?
Well, I certainly us in the great state of Maricopa always sort of think of this as the Southeast Valley district. It contains a pretty decent portion of Pinal County, including Apache Junction, Gold Canyon, and the Santan Valley area. Santan Valley recently incorporated mm-hmm. and overnight became the largest city in Pinal County. The sheriff is incredibly popular, one of the most popular individuals in Pinal County. He was all the way through and still remains very popular in Pinal County. So I think he's counting on that as part of that popularity. So not only is it just sort of this MAGA reality personality, ability to raise money after a Senate race, name ID is probably better. He's also really popular in yeah. Pinal County. So I think those things help him a lot and make it a much more competitive race for him. Gone are the days where we just think of that as, oh, it's a Gilbert, you know, sort of the East Valley piece. It's actually a much broader Pinal County piece. And Pinal is one of the places that is getting more conservative over time.
This to me is such an interesting race because for many reasons, but also, you know, you have sort of the outsider candidate in someone like Jay Feely. We talk about name ID. He clearly has name ID. He's clearly, I would think, a pretty popular person. I mean, he was a successful NFL player for many years, including with the hometown team here. How does that sort of factor into somebody who's been in elected office is popular? Somebody who's not been in elected office is also popular.
Well, they both wear uniforms, right? So, I mean, you've got Feely in a Cardinals uniform and you've got the sheriff in a sheriff's uniform. In that case, in a Republican primary, I think of the two, probably the sheriff's uniform and the badge do a little better.
You think that's more popular than a kicker's uniform?
Yeah, I think with the if he wore the one bar,
the single bar,
like in the old days,
the old Sean Landetta bar there.
Now I haven't seen Feely speak much, but you know he did television after his time in the NFL. He's pretty well spoken. I would suspect that will help. So is the sheriff. So I think it will be interesting because you've got several well spoken candidates. So it'll come down to sort of organizing and money in that race.
Tony, let me ask you about a newish, I guess, party, or at least a newly named political party in Arizona. The No Labels Party is now the Arizona Independent Party. And I kind of wonder if for some voters this might prove confusing, who consider themselves independents and maybe confuse like not being registered with a party with being registered with the Arizona Independent Party.
Well, I mean, that stuff like that has happened before where depending on what people write down, you know, they might write down independent and they're listed sort of differently on the file or whatever. But I think maybe when it comes down to it, I think that this kind of a name change in the long run doesn't really matter. I think that I'm not saying they did this because they thought that this is the way they could trick voters. I'm not saying that.
Sure.
But anyone who thinks that, I think, is just not giving voters enough credit. It's really a challenge to, to win as a third party candidate or to pull people away if the candidate doesn't have a high profile. And so, you know, I'm not too worried about this. It's a little bit annoying to me in some ways, the idea that this is going to, you know, that this is what voters are looking for. I don't think that's what we're seeing, you know, that voters are looking for some sort of middle party. I think people are looking for sort of boldness and a clear vision and are looking for people who will get things done. And they're sometimes willing to look past ideology in order to do that. I think we're seeing that happening now. And so, you know, I'm not sure how much of a role this is going to have in anything, but yeah, they decided to change their name.
Well, so, Paul, obviously we have no idea who is going to run on this party platform, if anybody.
Right.
But I'm wondering, assuming that they get some candidates in some races, what kind of role does that play in voter behavior and in the results?
Well, first of all, it messes up my narrative. I always like to say there's not an independent party in the state of Arizona. Most folks are unaffiliated, and there's a smaller portion that consider themselves independent, small I. So now there's an independent party. It's a little bit of a hack. So if you wanted to run unaffiliated in the state, you go straight to the general election, but you have you got to collect six times as many signatures as any other candidate. So now this gives people an opportunity to get on a ballot as a quote unquote independent for a much, much smaller qualification. And I think that's going to be attractive to a lot of candidates. So I think we'll see more third party candidates. And the last time around, we only had one or two in all of the legislature. I think we might see more in the future. And I think it will at least create some dialogue where independent voters will not be able to be ignored until the general election, because if you want to build that coalition of folks, you're going to want to get to them early. So that'll be interesting. They're a very small group right now still, but I do see a chance for them to grow that number, A, and B, probably field some competitive candidates. Maybe that they don't necessarily win, but they definitely will change the dialogue.
So, Tony, I mean, do you think this is maybe more of a long game as opposed to a 2026 issue, maybe a 2028, 2030 kind of thing where this party might have some real impact on elections?
Well, I'm still waiting for the Reform Party to have the impact that they thought they would have when they announced. I just don't the way that we elect. You know, I think maybe this will have an impact in like city races or some of these other types of races. The way that we elect people is the reason why there's a two-party system. It's the fact that it's a, you know, first past the post, two people, that's what it is. Like, that, you know, political science say that the method of our election is the reason why there's two parties. And so unless the method of our elections change, I don't think that this party is going to grow.
All right, interesting. So guys, we got about 30 seconds left, so I'm going to spring something on you. World Series starts tonight. Who you got? Dodgers, Blue Jays, Paul?
Not the Dodgers. But I
you don't care who it is as long as it's not the Dodgers.
But I do want to say this is the last weekend to mail in your ballot. The November 4th election is coming up. And you need to make sure to mail your ballot this weekend. Otherwise, you need to bring it to a Dropbox location.
So maybe fill it out while you're watching the World Series.
Exactly.
And then you can mail it in. Tony, who do you got?
I've got Phoenix Suns tonight. I'm going to be watching the Suns.
You know they're not playing
the
World Series, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they're not. Yeah.
That is the biggest dodge I've
ever heard. I'll give you a big prediction. They'll win more games than they lose this year.
The Suns
will.
Yeah. Wow. That is a hot take,
I think.
There we go. According to a lot of the NBA prognosticators. All right. Tony Connie, Paul Benz, thanks to you both. I really appreciate it. You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.